In part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation, dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon to AM 580, or perhaps you're listening online at WILL.UIUC.edu. On the program today, in this portion of the program, Computers in You. This is a topic we take up once a month. Peter Kimball is our guest this month. He is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST 3 Consortium, Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. Listeners, I welcome your questions, your telephone calls for Peter Kimball this afternoon. Join us with the telephone call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area. 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. As I mentioned, this is a topic we take up once a month, and beginning next month, we're going to move it to the third Monday of the month. So our next Computers in You program will be Monday, August 21st. But here we are on the third Thursday of the month. It's August. No,
it's still July.
It's still July. But it feels like...
It certainly does.
It feels like it's been summer for a long time.
Well, you know, when this moves to Mondays, that'll give people something to look forward to Mondays for, at least once a month.
There you go. Okay. Well, let's invite those listeners to give us a call. Once again, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. No customers at the moment, Peter, so let me say welcome back.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to get here.
And why don't we talk a little bit about Microsoft's announcement.
Microsoft's announcement, as of the 11th of July, which is just last week, Microsoft finally announced the end of support of Windows 98 and its related software operating systems, Windows 98 Second Edition and Windows ME. There are, by some estimates, still 70 million machines out there using Windows 98 or 98SC or ME. But after an initial delay, they were originally going to end support in 2003, I believe, and they extended it. What does that mean? That means that no longer, after the last week, will Microsoft release or support any security patches. So if there are any more flaws discovered, they're not going to be fixed. They have ended support, so if you were to call Microsoft, well, free support ended a couple of years ago, but you were able to pay on a per-instant basis and call them and ask questions like, my whole toolbar disappeared or something like that. That's no longer available. And some software companies, because of the end of Microsoft support for Windows 98, are going to stop supporting 98. Perhaps the most significant one is Firefox, since a lot of people are using the Firefox browser. And the Mozilla Foundation has announced that certainly the next Firefox coming out in 2007, which will be 3.0, will not support Windows 98 or ME or at all. And there's some question, not quite resolved yet, that the next version of Firefox, the browser that's gaining a lot of market share, Firefox 2.0, scheduled to come out next month in August, may also not support Windows 98.
Okay, so what do all these folks with 70 million?
70 million
machines?
Across. Yes. Not all of them in the U.S., but... And these are machines, of course, that would have been purchased 8 or more years ago, typically, with Windows 98 installed, or at least 5 or 6 years, because Windows 2000 and Windows XP have been out now for quite some time. And what they're going to need to do is, well, the short answer is just be very careful. Make sure that their antivirus software is completely up to date, that they're running some sort of software firewall. It's mostly of a concern for people who have a what's called a broadband internet connection, where you've got a cable modem or a DSL, and you're essentially in an always-on, always-connected state. There is kind of a silver lining to this. Because Windows 98 is such an old operating system, a lot of the newest malware, the virus threats, the Trojans, the spyware and such, won't even run on Windows 98 anymore. It's all being targeted to the newer versions. General industry reaction to this is that Microsoft really had no choice. They pretty much had to end this. When the question comes up, well, what should you do for all these 70 million people? Don't you need to keep supporting them? It's perhaps a little bit arbitrary and artificial, but one of the analogies that Microsoft gave is that there are a lot of automobiles out there, recent model automobiles, that have anti-lock brakes, that have airbags. But the automotive industry really can't say everybody's going to go out. You know, they're not making any cars without anti-lock brakes. They're not making any car, or they're making a few, but they're not making any without airbags, for example. And can the auto industry say everybody who's driving the old one now has to go to a new automobile? And obviously they can't. So Microsoft can't really keep supporting the old versions. These Windows 98 and Windows 98 SE are the last versions of Windows that actually run on DOS, the old command line disk operating system from the original IBM PC days. They have this sort of disk operating system, or DOS, at their foundation, and they're just inherently less secure than any of the other operating systems out there. So be careful. Now, the problem is you could easily say, well, we'll just upgrade, but if it's an older machine, like 8 years old, it may not have the hardware requirements to upgrade. So it's going to become more of a problem. People don't have to shut it off right now, but if they want to be completely safe, they need to be really careful in terms of their online access.
Okay, so it's a little bit of a good news, bad news kind of situation. All right. We've got a listener waiting to talk with us now in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. Yes, we've recently started to experience a problem. We're using Windows XP Professional, and when we try to access some files that we like, PDF files on the internet, like downloading a map or something, we'll get an error message that says, or at least a message that says, Internet Explorer has encountered a problem with an add-on. The following add-on was running when this problem occurred. And we found that add-on, and we've tried to disable it, and when we disable it, we still get the message. And we've tried to update the ActiveX portion of it, and it won't allow us to do that. So do you have any suggestions about what this might involve?
So you have did it identify what the actual add-on was? Did it give you any sort of...
Yes, it did. It gave us the file that it was.
Okay, but it didn't say anything. It just gave you a file name that was somewhat cryptic then? And
well, it was like acropdf.dll. And it said it had to do with Adobe PDF Browser Control.
Right. So the Acro definitely is a prefix on a lot of files that are part of the Acrobat Reader.
Okay.
What I would attempt to do would be to go to your control panel.
Okay.
Just go to Start, Settings, Add Remove Programs. You should find listed their Acrobat Reader, or it might be called Adobe Reader now.
Okay, go to Start, Settings. Oh, I've got to write this down.
Or you go to Start, Control Panel, or Start, Settings, and then Control Panel.
Start, Settings, Control Panel, okay.
And then there should be a one of the options that you'll see there is to add or remove programs. And when you look, it'll take a moment for that list to, it takes a while for the computer to look over all of its installed programs, but then it'll give you a whole series of programs, and one of them will be probably under the A's, they're all alphabetized, it'll be something like Adobe Acrobat Reader or Adobe Reader or something of that sort.
Right, it says Adobe Reader 7.0.8.
Okay. If you're having trouble with this, my suggestion, because that's a free software, so you can always download it again.
Okay.
So my suggestion would be to tell it that you want to remove that software.
Okay.
Remove it. It'll all remove. And then just to be safe and make sure that there aren't any leftover vestiges, reboot the machine. You won't be required to, but it's probably a good idea.
Okay.
And then go to the Adobe site.
Okay.
And when you get to the Adobe site, you can, with just a little bit of searching, go to the Adobe Reader and download the free version of Adobe Reader, which I think will actually be 7.0.9. But that should, when it's installed, replace all of your various other files. I have seen some other systems in which little bits of leftover Acrobat versions have caused problems, but this has usually fixed it.
Okay, and this would now, we also have on an old Acrobat 5.0. Should I get rid of that too?
It's Adobe Acrobat. Now, is it the full Acrobat or is it Acrobat Reader?
No, the only one that says Reader is the 7.0.8.
Well, the Acrobat program itself, Acrobat 5.0, it's a much older version. The Acrobat program, as opposed to the Reader, allows you to create PDF files. It was installed with some versions of Microsoft Office.
Okay.
If you're not doing that, if you're not creating them, you could certainly clear things up by deleting the Acrobat 5.0 because you're probably not using it. But you could also try, before you delete Acrobat 5.0, you could just get rid of the Reader, do the reboot, download the Acrobat Reader, and see if that solves it. If that doesn't, then I probably would be tempted to go back and remove the Acrobat program itself.
Okay, and then would we replace that Acrobat program with anything else?
Well, the Acrobat program, the one that actually creates PDFs, and this is why I wouldn't do this initially, is not a free download. This is a program that Adobe sells. So that's why if you've got an older version of Acrobat, it was there. It was probably tied into an older version of some other software you've got, such as Microsoft Office, Microsoft Word, or something of that sort. May well have come bundled with the computer system. I'm noticing on this somewhat older computer system that I'm looking at here in the studio, there's Acrobat 5.0 on it as well, and I'm not sure if that was initially installed or was something that had been added. But the current version of Adobe Acrobat is 7.0.9. They keep the Acrobat Reader and the Acrobat programs with similar versions. So that is definitely an older version. But if you do remove it, you will not be able to get the new version of full Acrobat free. That's Adobe gives away for free the Reader, but does not give away for free the program that allows you to create PDF files, which is what that Adobe Acrobat itself does.
And do you think, I mean, does that come on like Office? We just recently got Office.
Well, Office, some versions of Office, and I'm not quite sure the current status, they don't really come with Office. It may be bundled. If you buy a computer system with Office and other things, they may include the basic version of Adobe Acrobat. But the features that many versions that some people have, and I'm not sure what Microsoft's current policy on this is, to allow, there's a debate whether Microsoft Word, for example, should create PDF files. It's a well-known standard, but of course if Microsoft starts doing that, then are they being unfair in terms of giving away something for free that Adobe would sell? So I don't know exactly where that Acrobat 5.0 came from, other than it came quite a while ago because it's at least a couple, 3 years old.
Okay. And can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
We also have, this is a PDF question too. If we are using Internet Explorer, we have no problems accessing PDFs. But if we are using Mozilla Firefox, we do. Is that?
There may be a setting. I have not, again, used Firefox that extensively because a lot of the sites that I visit require that I have some of the ActiveX controls that really only Internet Explorer supports. But you should certainly be able to access them. And downloading the new version of Acrobat Reader and installing it, Acrobat, the install program, should recognize that you have both Internet Explorer and the Mozilla Firefox on there. So that may resolve that problem as well. But other than that, it is a if it's not an installation of the plugin for Mozilla Firefox, it might be a configuration in that. And installing Acrobat over again should fix it.
That too, huh? And can you quickly tell what really is ActiveX?
ActiveX is a technology that is developed by Microsoft, and it allows a browser, for example, when a browser that supports it, such as Internet Explorer, has ActiveX controls, it allows it to do a lot of things to the rest of your computer. For example, when you use Windows Update, that it's not possible for just a browser by itself to examine all of your files and to update all of the various components that need updating. So that's done using ActiveX controls.
Okay.
Any time that you come across a new ActiveX control or some website wants to download it, the standard security settings in Internet Explorer say, are you sure you want to download this? And here's who it's from, and here's the security information. So if you went to some random site or said, oh, here's a nice little screensaver, a nice little toolbar, and it prompted you to say, this site would like to download this ActiveX control, you'd really want to think twice about it. Because ActiveX controls, you're giving the computer a lot, or the program, a lot of access to your computer. And that's why, for security reasons, and to avoid a whole area of issues, programs such as Firefox and Opera simply don't support ActiveX directly.
I see. Okay.
But there are some sites where you have to have it for those sites to be functional. Windows Update site.
Okay, because I do know that at least what I'd heard was you have far fewer problems with viruses and security problems with Firefox.
And that's one of the reasons, because of it does not support, you're not going to have any trouble with security issues caused by rogue ActiveX controls or software, because Firefox just won't download them, won't run them.
And so if you find there's ActiveX that's been you've allowed on your computer, if it isn't something that you really clearly recognize, is it a good idea to get rid of that too?
Yes, except that there may be some functionality in some of these ActiveX controls that you don't even, from the name of the ActiveX control, you may not recognize what it does until all of a sudden you go to some other site and discover that it no longer functions properly for you.
I see. Okay.
So you have to be a little bit careful.
Okay.
Because a lot of these names are somewhat cryptic.
I see. Well, thanks so much for all your help.
Yes.
Okay.
Good luck.
Good luck. Bye. Next, we talk with a listener on a cell phone, line 4. Hi.
Hi. A comment and a question.
Okay.
Mac OS X will allow you to save an assortment of different types of file information in PDF format. And my question would be, have you guys had any experience with the new Intel PowerBooks from Macintosh? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
I have seen one. I have a colleague who has one. I have not had a lot of time to play with it. He was in the process of getting boot camp for it, because with the Intel processor, it allows you to boot up into Windows XP if you need to do so, as well as into the Mac OS. Of course, Apple is going to be in all of their hardware platforms. They're all moving towards the Intel chip, which simplifies a lot of issues for them. From what I have seen and from what I have heard, we have a definite improvement in performance as well as greater flexibility. And it's going to make it much easier to have hardware that is more easily compatible with the Mac OS, because there's always been a little bit of trouble with certain hardware devices and CD readers and writers and DVD burners and such not always running directly with the Mac OS because the drivers weren't there. It's going to be easier for those manufacturers to create the appropriate drivers since it's now running on an Intel platform.
Okay. Next, we're going to talk with a listener in Pasotum on line 1. Hi.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
I have had my hard drive partitioned into a C and a D drive, and the C actually got partitioned too small, so that now I'm getting a lot of messages of disk full and so forth, especially when you want to put a new piece of software on, it all defaults to the C. Everything defaults to the C, and if you want to do anything, you gotta, you know, go in and tell it to go to the D or somewhere else. So rather than make things simpler by partitioning it, we made it actually more complicated. So my thinking is I'll just go back and reformat it and make it all one big C drive. And if I need another drive, I'll just add another one separately. Yeah, any comments on that? And also, if I do repartition it, or if I do wipe it, reformat it, whatever, what are the basic things you should start doing before you go about that?
Well, I've certainly sympathize with your situation. There was a time when I tried to do exactly the same thing. Had a young son at home and wanted to have separate partitions. We were sharing a computer at that point.
Oh, yeah. My son did the same thing.
Yes. And you never really end up getting the right amount of space because right. You never anticipate exactly how large a lot of the software is going to be. Especially, even if you are careful about installing new software and specifying, no, I want this on the D drive, some components still have to be installed on the Windows system. Drive, which is the C drive.
Uh-huh.
Of course, if you're going to be reformatting, you realize that once you've reformatted everything, you're going to be reinstalling the operating system, reinstalling your software. By itself, reformatting is going to wipe out all of the data that you've got, so you'll want to make backup copies of all the documents and all the images and anything else that you want to keep.
Right.
Having said that, doing so gives you a nice, clean system. The very first thing you'll want to do after you've reformatted it, and presumably you've got the the appropriate Windows CDs to install your version of Windows again,
mm-hmm.
And the very first thing you'll want to do with after that is to get antivirus software in place, and then also the very first thing, so there are actually two very first things, take your pick which one you do first, would be to go to the Windows Update site, because the version of Windows that is on your CD will not have the latest patches.
Right. Okay.
So do that. Make sure you've got the antivirus software and completely updated, the Windows software completely updated, and that may take a fair amount of time, because you may have, depending on how old your CD is, you may have megabytes and megabytes of 15 or 20 or 30 different security downloads that will have to be done.
Uh-huh.
Then, of course, you reinstall all of your application software, word processors, whatnot, other browsers. You'll end up with a wonderfully clean system. It'll tend, because there won't be all of this extra stuff that's around, it will tend to run more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't want to do that, there is another option. Assuming that you have a fair amount of free space still on the D partition of your drive,
yeah,
and that is to use a program that can actually resize the partition, remove space from the D drive, add it to the C drive by shuffling it around. The best known and perhaps the most reliable of those is a program called Partition Magic.
Okay.
Now, that's a fairly slow process because it has to the actual space on the drive has to be contiguous. It all has to be in the same area for the C drive and D drive, so it has to move things on the D drive out of the way so it can expand the C drive and such. And as with any sort of major manipulation of that sort, you'll want to make sure that you have made backups of anything that you may want to keep in safe, have safekeeping.
Right.
Probably nothing will happen.
Uh-huh.
Usually nothing happens,
uh-huh.
But if it does, you'll really want to have that CD or other backup medium of your images, of your documents and everything, so that while it'd be a pain if something happens, it wouldn't be a disaster.
Okay.
But that's the other option. And Partition Magic, I think you'll find, I haven't checked on prices lately, but it's under $100, I'm pretty sure, and it may be quite a bit less. So it's not a free program.
How about the reformatting software itself? Is that just a DOS that's going to be?
If you put in, you'll have the option. If you put in the and boot from the CD that's got the Windows software on it,
uh-huh.
And you can specify in the BIOS program, when you first turn on the computer, you'll have some kind of menu, often F1 or F4 or something, that can specify where to boot from. And so if you tell it that you want to boot directly from the CD rather than from the existing Windows that you've got, then you'll have the option to reinstall Windows, and you'll be also be given the option to totally reformat everything before you do so.
Okay.
So that's not going to require separate software. You've got that software, but what you can't do is start up Windows from the hard drive and then reformat it from there, because Windows would be wiping itself out and it won't do that. You have to start Windows, or at least start the install program, from the CD.
Would you repartition it, the hard drive, again? I mean, what's the advantage anymore? Why not?
Well, I've decided not to do that anymore because it's just hard to figure out exactly where you want it to go. The advantage is you can control sharing. You can control if you wish to get into it, quotas and such. I've decided in my own, both in our home network and also in our lab networks and at the department that it's just generally not worth doing it. If I want to have an additional amount of space, most computer systems these days have room and actually have the cable connections and such to install a second physical hard drive. And
right.
That's perhaps the better way to go.
Right. But there's none of the old DOS problems where you can only support such and, you know.
Not with the latest versions of Windows, unless you are running on a computer system that is sufficiently old that its BIOS, its built-in chips that handle the disk I/O and other things are not able to handle. But that should not be a problem. You can get up to, I think there's probably a limit someplace, but it's hundreds of gigabytes.
One last question. I've got CDs for all the software I purchased, except some software you purchase, you just download it. What's the procedure there to get those? I'm not sure where.
So you purchase the software, but rather than getting a CD, you just get permission to download.
Right. Yeah. So where are those codes?
Well, that could be a bit of a problem. What you want to do before you wipe everything out, which is another reason to perhaps think of using partition magic to short-term take care of the problem of not having enough space on Drive C. But what you'll need to do for that software that you've downloaded, there are two possibilities. One is you kept someplace, hopefully on Drive D or somewhere, the actual software and a record of the serial number necessary. If you didn't, most companies, unfortunately, don't really maintain for more than a few months or maybe even 30 days the records that you need that you would require to be able to download it again. So identify those programs, the ones that you do not have CDs for, that you do not have serial numbers for that were downloaded, and then hopefully there won't be too many of them, and then visit the websites of those companies or perhaps if you can find on the website a support number, call them and ask them, I need to reformat this. I downloaded my software. How do I get another one? And they may well, if they've maintained records, say, oh, yes, we see that you paid for this at such and such a time.
Okay.
But that's going to be up to the individual software providers.
Okay. I said it was the last question, but I do have one more if that's okay.
Sure.
Hard drives are so cheap anymore. Why not just go get a new one and start over and keep what I've got to pass it across?
That's fine. The only problem you will have is since your existing hardware has Windows software installed on Drive C,
yeah,
and you're running out of space there,
yeah,
that can still come back and be a problem from time to time.
Yeah.
You can try to do such things as specify that all of your temporary folders will be someplace other than on the C drive, and anything that you can manage to move or reinstall in the extreme case off of the C drive. But if you're limited, if you've only got a megabyte or two or five or ten left on the C drive, even if you install a new hard drive, that doesn't do any good for the current installation of Windows.
Yeah, but if you took the drive that's in there out completely.
Well, you could certainly do that, but then you are simply back to, you have to reinstall everything.
Right, but then you got a new hard drive, though.
That's right.
It's 3 years. I'm worried it's run 3 years, so am I on borderline end of its life anyway?
Well, possibly, but the mean time before failure for a lot of hard drives, if they don't fail in the first a few hundred hours of use, there's a good chance that they may go for 15 or 20,000.
Okay.
So yes, it could fail at any time, and certainly you don't want to assume that it's never going to fail, and therefore you don't need to make backups
because
you do need to make backups.
Right.
But chances are it's not going to die anytime soon if it hasn't died yet.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're quite welcome.
Okay.
Bye.
Good luck with that. This is the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking today about computers. It's a topic we take up once a month. Beginning next month, by the way, though, we're going to move it to the third Monday of the month. So our next Computers and You program will be Monday, August 21st. Our guest this afternoon here on Computers and You on the Afternoon Magazine, Peter Kimball. He is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST 3 Consortium Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions about computers. No one waiting at the moment. The numbers If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And we've got a couple of calls coming in now, so I'm going to stretch here just a little bit Peter Kimball. And let me say once again, beginning next month, in August, we are going to move this topic, Computers and You, to the third Monday of the month. So in August, our Computers and You program will be Monday, August 21st. Let's take a listener call now on line one. It's a listener on a cell phone. Hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the show.
Sure.
Peter read an article, I thought it was in the Trib, but maybe you wrote it, about a USB to USB connection between my home unit and, let's say, a laptop in order to enable file transfer. I guess there was a little box and a little bit of cable involved and no mention of software. And the price was like less than $50 or something. Can you fill me in a little bit on that, and I'll get off the air. Thank you.
Well, what you're probably referring to is something that's called peer-to-peer networking, so that you don't actually have a specialized hub or, for example, in a installation where you might have a wireless access point for wireless connections and what's called a wireless router. You could also plug in multiple machines into that, and then it's just like it's on a regular commercial network at a department or at a business or at a school. But peer-to-peer networking is done a little bit differently, where you just have to connect them, and USB would typically work. And that networking can be set up if you are on Windows. You would simply go to the Start menu and choose Settings and go into Network and Dial-Up Connections and say you want to establish a new connection. You don't really need any particular software, although the box, and I'm not familiar with just what company or what it includes other than the network, the USB connection, but you can, from within Windows itself, specify that you're going to establish a peer-to-peer connection without having to deal with things like IP addresses and all that sort of stuff that would happen with a router that you would install, which would be a little bit more expensive, but there are routers now also available, including wireless routers, for under $100 as well.
Okay, let's go on to another listener, a listener in Champaign on line two. Hello.
Hi. I have an Apple iBook, and since I've had it, I've had problems with Microsoft Word crashing on me. And I talked to the University of Illinois. They gave me some free Birex software, which it only seems to work so well. And it's still, I use Microsoft Word. That's the main application I use on my computer. And it just keeps crashing regularly. So one thing I've done to prevent that is have it automatically save like every 5 or 10 seconds. But it's still kind of a less than ideal situation. I don't know if there's any way to rectify that.
Well, when you talked to the support folks at the U of I and they gave you the Virex software, I presume that they had thought that perhaps you had gotten some sort of virus and this would perhaps protect you from it or find it and eliminate it?
Yeah, they said that Microsoft Word, even though I have an Apple, that something about the platform was still susceptible to viruses like some other applications on a Mac aren't.
Yes, and actually that's because if there is a security flaw of some sort in Microsoft Word, and the argument is that any software that is sufficiently complex is not going to be possible to be 100% secure, whether that Word is running on Windows or the Mac or wherever, that could still be exploited, especially if you were unfortunate enough to get a malformed, intentionally malformed Word document that was designed to exploit that. If the Virex doesn't find it, and I presume you've gone to the you've updated the software, the virus definition settings.
Yeah.
And if it still doesn't find it, and you do a full system scan, I'm not sure that this is going to work for you, but it might possibly help. It depends upon exactly where the malware made its entry, but you could. And this is a bit more extreme, but, you know, having it crash, how often? You say you're saving every 5 or 10 seconds, but it tends to crash, what, every 5 or 10 minutes or randomly?
No, nothing like that, but I'll be working on something. if I spend 8 hours a day on Microsoft Word, it'll crash maybe two or three times.
Okay, and is this at all associated? Can you tell if you're running other programs at the same time?
It could be. Like usually I'll have the music playing and sometimes the internet open also, but I haven't. I always have that, so I don't ever use just Microsoft Word to see
sure.
if that's... Yeah.
Well, that's probably not it. And I'm assuming that you've got plenty of memory on your machine, so that's not really an issue. What you could try, it wouldn't hurt, but it's a little bit inconvenient, is to uninstall, to just delete Microsoft Word entirely and then reinstall it from the clean, I presume you've got a CD copy that of the software.
Actually, when I bought the computer, it came with Microsoft Word, and I don't have a copy of myself.
Okay, so that complicates things a little bit.
Yeah.
When you bought the computer, did they send along a CD with the installed software, or they just said, here it all is, it's all installed, and you can run with it?
Yeah, I bought a computer from used from
okay.
an individual. Yeah.
Okay, so they just transferred the Microsoft Word to you. Have you gone to the Microsoft Word site, I presume, the Microsoft Office site, and updated your copy of Microsoft Word?
No, I didn't know you could do that.
You actually can. Well, you certainly can do it on the Windows side. I'm not sure that it's quite as automatic, but you can go to Microsoft.com/office, probably, and then look for downloads or support, and there may well be some updates, especially if Word has been on there for quite some time. There may be a number of fixes, not only security fixes, but also fixes that may fix flaws in the program that might cause the crashing even if you didn't have any sort of a infection.
Right.
So
okay.
I would do that. Worst case, then, although it may be a little bit difficult, depending on which version, are you running, what, Word 2004? Or do you know?
I think so, yeah.
Worst case would be to see if you could acquire a copy of Microsoft Word, and I assume you're affiliated with the university, so it's very cheap to do through university academic pricing, and just remove it and reinstall the whole thing. But I would first go to the Microsoft Office site and see what updates and patches are available for the download.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay, good luck.
Thanks a lot.
Next, we talk with a listener in Eureka on line 4. Hi.
Hi, could you just briefly review your advice to persons who are still on Windows 98, please?
Okay.
Well, the most important thing, hopefully anybody who's on Windows 98 has been, at least up through July 11th, been regularly checking for updates to the software from Microsoft. If that hasn't been done, there's not much to do about it now because they're no longer available.
Uh-huh.
The other most important things are to make sure that you have virus software installed, antivirus software, and that you keep it updated with the virus definitions, that you have anti-spyware software installed and you keep it updated. And ideally, especially if you have a fast broadband internet connection, such as with a cable modem or a DSL line, that you have some sort of firewall in place. Although if you are connected to a broadband, because that's the most common way that you would get run into security problems over the internet. And if you're only dialing in periodically, you're not in quite as much risk as if the system is sitting there visible at all times. If you do have a fast connection, one thing that can also help protect and isolate you a little bit from the big internet out there and any malefactors who are attempting to compromise your system is to have a router. Typically, if you've got a cable modem or you've got the DSL modem, then it could plug into a router. Your computer then plugs into the router, and the outside internet only sees the internet address of that router, and you have a separate internal address for any machines plugged in on the home side of that device, and so then you are not quite as exposed to the internet as if you were just plugged directly, your machine were plugged directly into the cable modem or directly into the DSL.
May I ask one more question, please?
Sure.
What kind of anti-spyware do you recommend?
There are a couple, and you'll find them. One of them is SpyBot, and the other Spyware, adware, malware, they're all sort of there. But SpyBot is free for the download.
SpyBot.
And it is, let me just see if I can.
Yeah, because it can be a little tricky in terms of.
Yeah, because there are some.
There's some
fake sites that are close to SpyBot that say, we'll take care of you. And boy, do they. Because they're not really the right one.
They're
fake addresses that are close. But I should be able to find here in just a moment a more precise. Okay, so the best place to go for the spyware is SpyBot Search and Destroy, which is at
safer-networking.org. Okay.
Another one that's very good is called AdAware, as in adware, but you're aware of your adware, and you can certainly run both of them, and they're both free for the download, although both of them also have professional versions. So if you wish, you know, they'll kind of say, here's our version, it's $19.95 or $29.95, but if you look around, you'll get the free one. And AdAware is at www.lavasoft, as in volcanic lava, lavasoft, USA, L-A-V-A-S-O-F-T, USA, .com.
Lavasoft.
LavasoftUSA.com.
Okay.
And so those are two of them. Another company that has a very good firewall is Zone Alarm. They make a professional version and a free for the downloading firewall. You'll have to check with some of these. As far as I know, Zone Alarm still has a version for Windows 98, but you know that's going to end before too much longer.
Uh-huh.
And Zone Alarm is at www.zonelabs.com.
ZoneLabs.com. Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
You're quite welcome.
Okay. And our last caller this afternoon in Charleston, line one. Hi.
Hi, thanks. Just a quick question. Just recently purchased a home in Charleston, and before we actually got an internet connection, a roommate of ours just hooked her computer up, and with the wireless router, it just, by default, I guess, found a connection. I guess my question is that illegal, or is there a way they can even trace that?
Well, what happened is somebody within, you know, one or two houses, maybe a little bit further away, has a wireless router because they've got a wireless system. They've got an internet connection, and they just pulled the router out of the box and stuck it there, and it's broadcasting freely, and that's what this laptop found. So you are essentially, you are, or anybody using that, is using somebody else's internet connection.
Oh, okay.
It is going to, therefore, if two people are using it, aside from the ethics of the matter, it's going to be only half the speed if two people are both downloading at the same time.
I see. Okay.
Is it illegal? I think that under some circumstances it is, but I'm not sure in Illinois just what the legal status is. Is it unethical? Well, yes, that certainly it is.
Gotcha.
Is it insecure? Yes, because if you're there and connected to it with one machine and it's unprotected, then anybody else who's driving by can see both of your machines. And if there are any weaknesses, because they now have access to the same wireless router as you do, they could certainly probe for that. Not too likely in our environment down here in downstate Illinois, but it does certainly happen. So that's the situation.
All right. Well, thank you much.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Interesting. So how do you avoid somebody piggybacking on your router?
Well, what you do is when you install it, you do not just leave it unsecured. There is Windows equivalent security. Most recent routers have a new version. The old original version called something called WEP for Windows equivalent privacy has been hacked and is easy to hack and so is not that secure. I've got an article here that says it's kind of like taking candy from a baby. You know, it's really not that difficult to do. There is a more recent one, especially with the 802.11g called routers, which is another version called WPA, wireless. I can't even remember what the acronym is now. And that's much better. The acronym is like, instead of taking candy from a baby, it's like burglarizing a home that has a good alarm system.
But the whole idea behind locks and...
And that's why, in many cases, if... And the other thing is, when a wireless router is installed, you should do things such as change the default administrator password. It comes out of the boxes intentionally. These companies, and all of them do it, D-Link and all the rest, they want to make it so that you pull it out, turn it on, and it's going
to
work.
Ready to go, right.
But unfortunately, it's going to be ready to work without any security. And so the manual that comes with it or the user guide will define how to do that, and that should be the very first thing you do. You put in that security key of some sort, even if it's the old one, WEP, it's much, much better than nothing. And then you simply have to specify that key for every machine you want to connect to.
Okay, very good. There we will leave it, and Peter, you'll be back in September.
On a Monday.
How about that?
On a Monday.
See you in September.
Yes.
Okay, beginning next month, we're going to move Computers in You to the third Monday of the month. So our next Computers in You program will be Monday, August 21st, and then Peter will be back on the third Monday in September. 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Jim Meadows is standing by this afternoon with a look at what happened today on the Chicago Board of Trade. Jim?
Yes, Celeste, and it looks like wheat has closed up for the day overall. Corn and soybeans closed down with the exception of soybean oil, which is up. And now let's take a look at those settlement prices. Kansas City September wheat, the high for the day was 505, the low 489. It settled at 502.5. That's a change up of 15.5. December wheat, 519 for the high, 505.5 for the low. It settled at 517.5, up 15. Kansas City March wheat, 523.5 for the high, 512 for the low, settling at 520.25. That's up 12.25. Looking at the Chicago Board of Trade, September wheat, the high 409, the low 395.5, settling at 406.5, up 13.5. December wheat, 426.75 for the high, the low 414, that's 414, settling at 424.5, up 11.75. March wheat, 445, the high 432, the low settling at 444, up 14.5. May wheat, 452 for the high, 446 for the low, settling at 452, that's a rise of 14. And July wheat at 458.5 for the high, 447.5 for the low. It settled at 456.75, up 10.5. Looking at corn for September, the high was 248.25, the low 241, settling at 242.5, down 2.25. December corn, 264.5 for the high, the low for the day, 257.25, settling at 259.25, down 2.5. March corn, the high was 277.5, the low 270.25, settling at 272.25, down 2.5. May corn, 285.5 for the high, the low 279.75, settling at 281.5, down 2.25. July corn, the high 294.75, the low 288.5, settling at 290.75, down 1.5. September corn, 299 for the high, the low 295.5, settling at 296.75, down 1.25. December corn, 306 for the high. That's December 07 corn, of course. 301.5 for the low, settling at 303.75. That's down 0.75. Taking a look now at soy.